Imagine a toy so iconic it practically wrote the playbook for pleasure. Allow me to introduce or reintroduce you to the Magic Wand, aka the Cadillac of Vibrators. The Magic Wand Original is a trusted companion in the journey of joy. Whether it's your first time chasing an orgasm or you're looking to give your partner a spine-tingling erotic massage, the Magic Wand should be your go-to. With powerful rumbles and several different rhythms and patterns, it's no wonder the Magic Wand has scooped up accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades. I'm so enamored with mine, I've customized my bedside table just to keep it within arm's reach at all times. But the magic doesn't stop with the original Magic Wand. The Magic Wand family has grown over the years, offering a variety of models to suit every lifestyle. Go cord-free with the Magic Wand Rechargeable. Embrace compact power without compromising intensity with the Magic Wand Mini. I love this Mini. Or the Micro, which is just teeny tiny and really powerful. Or enjoy a range of sensations with the Magic Wand Plus. Each model delivers the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original a legend. So are you ready to experience the magic? Visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to enchant pleasure seekers around the globe. That's sexwithemily.com/magicwand. Magic Wand, more than just a vibrator. Did you know that your gut is directly connected to your brain and can contribute to anxiety, stress, and depression, which, by the way, can also impact your sexual health? So here's my secret weapon for gut health, Just Thrive Probiotic. Now listen up. Just Thrive isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is the only one that survives your stomach acid and reaches your gut 100% alive. All those others, the ones that come in fancy drinks or you gotta refrigerate, nope, that's not even a thing. This is the one. I've noticed significant changes to my overall health. Like, this might be TMI, but I'm way more regular and my skin is glowing. Think of Just Thrive like your personal gut gardener. It maintains the health of your gut by weeding out the bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and then replenishes the good, making it a total game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, even your mood and sexual health. And if you want to check out my episode with Just Thrive's founder, Tina Anderson, we talk all about how gut bacteria plays a crucial role in your overall happiness, including your sex life. Because a healthy, balanced gut means less stress and more energy. So if you want to check it out, I'm offering a deal for my listeners. You can save 20% off site-wide at justthrivehealth.com with the promo code SEXWITHEMILY. That's 20% off on the probiotic that's truly changing lives and making waves in the wellness community. Everyone's talking about it. Don't just take my word for it. Try it for yourself. Go to justthrivehealth.com. Use promo code SEXWITHEMILY for 20% off.
It's lifelike, but where it's going to go is insane. But it's like, for women, we're like, why would I want to have sex with like a plastic doll? Why, that's not even interesting to me. It's like transactional. And to go back to intimacy, like we crave like connection and talking. And we're all so lonely right now anywhere. I think there is a loneliness epidemic.
What they're advertising Harmony as, it's not a sex bot. They're calling it a companionship bot. And in their advertising, they talk about, be the first to never be lonely again.
Exactly. Never be lonely again. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. On today's show, I'm joined by David Ewing Duncan to talk about his new book, Talking to Robots. And you know that the chapters we cover are all about intimacy and sex. Plus, I'm answering your emails. Topics include what the future might hold for sex robots, intimacy robots. I mean, what if you had your own hologram version of me? So you really love going down on your partner, but she's apprehensive. What's the deal? Okay, to shave or not to shave? The age-old question of sexual grooming. And you've got three kids and a threesome is the last thing on your mind, but your partner keeps bringing it up. How do you move forward? All this and more. Thanks for listening.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily, you got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's gotta have her standards. Oh, my.
The women know about shrinkage.
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God, I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, check out sexwithemily.com. We have amazing posts up there that are going to also change your sex, relationship, and dating life for sure. You can also find me on SiriusXM Stars Channel 109. It's weekdays, Monday through Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific, and you can get a free subscription at sexwithemily.com/SXM. Ooh, also, you guys, we have way more videos now. So check out our YouTube channel, and you can also check us out on Instagram. It's all at sexwithemily across the board, and tell me what you think of the videos, and obviously you should subscribe because we love when you do that.
There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co.
All right, guys. Hope you enjoy the show. I'm so excited to welcome my guest, David Ewing Duncan, E-W-I-N-G. He's an award-winning science journalist, print, television, radio, best-selling author of 9 books, published in 21 languages. You've been busy. You're impressive. Yeah, you're a frequent contributor to so many publications, Vanity Fair, MIT Technology Review, The New York Times, and others. You've won a lot of awards, and now you have a new book coming out in July.
Mm-hmm.
Talking to Robots, Tales from Our Human-Robot Futures. So congratulations on the book. I mean, I love the way you wrote it, from our future, present, past. Explain that, your choice to do that. I love it.
Well, it's kind of an experimental book. And by the way, I do want to thank you because you were in it.
I was in it. Thank you for interviewing me for an early chapter.
No, that was so much fun.
It was fun.
And we're trying to remember when that was. But
it was like a little over a year ago. And you're like, let's talk about sex and robots. I'm like, I'm still learning and getting into it, but they're coming. It's happening.
Or even
happening. Technology
in general. I mean, it's even beyond robots.
Right.
So we can get into that.
But yeah, we can get into anything.
Yeah.
But so wait, so tell me about, writing the book. What's been the
problem? Well, I'm a nonfiction writer. You know, I'm a journalist, and all of my other books have been nonfiction, so I actually have to deal with facts. This is an experiment, and that whole near future, I think anyway, or at least I tried to create a new tense called the present near future. Yeah. It's partly nonfiction, so it's 24 robots, including a sex bot, but there's a doc bot, a warrior bot, a journalism bot, a thriller writer bot, and it goes on and on. And so I report from the present, kind of what's happening in reality with these things. And I talk to real people like you,
mm-hmm.
and at least most of the chapters have a real person, you know, somebody who's an expert in that field, or they just thought up some crazy robot. But it's all wrapped in fictional stories. And I say it's, you know, sort of the old Isaac Asimov iRobot, if you remember that, meets something like Black Mirror.
Right.
So exactly. These are actual stories, kind of plot lines and all that. And that part I invented. And so the tense, this present, near future, we're sort of moving back and forth in time. And that was a huge challenge. And you can tell me
I read it. I mean, I love that you were like, so Emily, it was just so, it really did take me, because it really made me realize like, oh yeah, this is definitely happening. Like, we're definitely getting the robots, because you could picture it like, you know, Emily Morse, who was a, you know, what'd you say? Like a petite, you know, brunette who had a sex podcast that was popular in the early 21st century. She told me about, you know, she told me about intimacy and what I talked about. We talked about the intimacy and sex robot. And it was like, I just thought it was really well done. And it took me there to think, yeah, first of all, I'm a blip on the radar screen. And whenever this is happening, I love it. And yeah, I thought it was very clever. And it was a way to get into it, because I wouldn't typically be as interested in robots. Perhaps my brain doesn't go there as much, but I'm like, whoa, and reading this, I mean, definitely sex tech. And I've tried VR porn and all those things. But this, I was like, oh, I love it. Just, I think you succeeded. Well, at developing your new tents.
I appreciate that. And in fact, you and others that I talked to convinced me the chapter is actually called Sex Perens Intimacy Bot.
Yeah.
Because, well, Esther Perel, who I know, told me that, you know, boy, sex bots are so boring. Why would I talk to you? I can't do her Flemish accent.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah. But intimacy, that's interesting. So that's really what it became. Right. In the fictional story, which you helped me develop, in the future, it's not so much about sex. It's about intimacy and companionship.
Well right. Because in our conversation, you were saying, so what is the deal with sex robots? So it's like, it is true, though, when you think about it. And there are most of sex robots now, which there are Harmony. She's the most well-known sex robot right now. And, you know, they're what, like $10,000 if you want to get one. And they look pretty
even
real.
More.
Like I was saying, I was on this TV show a few years ago, 2 years ago, and it was about robots. It was like a talk show. And there was, Harmony was there, the sex robot. And she was across the room. And there was some guy like from The Bachelor on my show. We were both in the green room. And Harmony walked by, and I saw him like, didn't know there was a robot segment. And he was like, oh, and I'm like, that's the robot. You know, so it's lifelike, but where it's going to go is insane. But it's like, for women, we're like, why would I want to have sex with like a plastic doll? Why, that's not even interesting to me. It's like transactional. And to go back to intimacy, like we crave like connection and talking. And we're all so lonely right now anyway. I think there is a loneliness epidemic. Why would we want that? So I think what we had talked about, and when you mentioned your book, I was like, well, how are you going to replicate intimacy? So intimacy, that's what's going to be missing. And then you came up with the like, and this is the part that I liked, the intimacy robot of just being like, what if there's a sex therapist that's like a hologram that pops up in your room? It reminded me of like kind of what I do on the show every night. And I was like, okay, Bob, your wife has said to you 6 nights in a row now that she's ready to have sex and you have shut her down. Wouldn't it be time now for you to gently kiss her ear, you know, and then it goes away. Like, to me, that was a really, like, that I could see that happening. And that I would love. I'm kind of doing that every night.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that's, I love the way that we developed that story because, you know, I mean, sex can be mechanical and boring, right? It's about, it really is about how you're having sex, who you're having sex with. I mean, you're the one that knows more about this than I do, but, you know, if you're going to have something that's useful to a wide range of people other than, you know, I don't know, the kind of creepy sex, frankly, still creepy sex bots or fem bots that are out there now, I mean, how are you going to make this technology useful?
Right.
And we did. We cooked up this idea. It's like almost like having a, you know, a phone, like slab there. And wherever you are, wherever you want to have sex, you're outside, you're in your bedroom, wherever, you just set this thing down. And, you know, if you have a question or maybe want a little coaching or something,
therapy,
this little hologram pops up.
It's like, how can I help you with that? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Kind of like Alexa, right?
Right.
Hey, like it says in here, your book. So Emily Morse first articulate what an intimacy bot might look like, an AI system that does some of the things as a therapist. And say like, hey, you guys had a fight. You've had this fight for 6 months. Like, let's check in on a resolution right now. I mean, I think that is interesting. What did you find? I mean, you went deep. You talked to other people about this, the sex bot chapter. What did you find about the sex robots and that was interesting to you or scary?
Well, I think the present day is a little scary because it's mostly these fembots. There aren't that many himbots, if you will. I don't even know what you call manbots.
Right.
And, you know, as you said, as a woman, I have not, I don't know about the other women in the room here, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of interest in a male sex bot.
No.
And even, I don't think most men are interested in a female sex bot either. So it's a fairly small market. But these are kind of cartoonish-like bots, too. They look like, you know, the old Playboy centerfolds,
right.
You know, giant breasts and, you know.
They look like super... some of the chicks on Love Island, which I'm obsessed with.
Oh, my God,
with. I just saw
it
for the first time.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
And, you know, it's just, there's a wonderful new book out by Kate Devlin, who is a British author, and I was just over in the UK, and I got her book. It's called Turned On. I don't know if you've heard of this.
Oh, yeah, I have heard of it.
Yeah. Yep. So she does this wonderful description of, you know, these current day sex bots like Harmony as basically being these robotic heads, and they supposedly have artificial intelligence. That's what they're advertised as. I mean, it's hard to tell what that is anyway. And I try to get in that in the book in general, but and the rest of it is basically a plastic doll.
Right. Well, it's kind of like a big, or it's like a big fleshlight, like which is like the male masturbation sleeve, but now that's like encased in a big silicone body, and it's more. Sex is more mechanical for men in that way. They're like, I'll stick my penis in anything, so I might as well stick it into this sex robot. And maybe it'll be a lot less complicated than my girlfriend who keeps saying she wants more from me and I'm not taking out the trash enough. But yeah, I don't think that we're there yet. But for women, like when I've been asked about this, I just think, you know, maybe some of the pros are if there's certain things you've been wanting to try in the bedroom and you could test it with a sex robot, you could rent a robot. But I don't think it's going to be the solution. But did you find anything in your... in your studies that like maybe like this is maybe Harmony is not impressive, but in the next whatever how many years we should be a little concerned? Are we ever gonna?
I think we're pretty far away from anything that we would
in our lifetime
really imagine. Well, I don't know. It depends on what you mean by in your lifetime.
Okay.
But, you know, you think of like movies or TV like Westworld. I mean, there are prostitutes galore in there, right? But they're and they look a lot. They look really. In fact, in that show in the future, they had to make them look slightly not human because it was too weird for the customers, you know, in the Westworld theme park to actually have sex with or do the other things they were doing. And, of course, we know if you watch that show, that's a pretty violent, dark show, especially how women are treated or these women robots. And they start waking up and they start becoming conscious. So I don't know. That's one way it could go.
Right. Is that what you're thinking? They're like, how are you feeling about it? Did you go in with a certain belief and now you're like, how do you feel about robots now? What's happening in the future?
Well, robots in general. In fact, I'm working on a story right now on I'm more afraid of stupid robots than smart robots.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we see all around us, you know,
I feel that way about
Alexa
too.
Or Siri or whatever, they only work about half the time.
Right.
And, you know, they don't get the most simple questions. They don't have what's called general artificial intelligence or general intelligence. Sometimes they can do one thing really, really well.
Isn't like humans kind of, don't you feel like humans can be disappointing too?
Oh, yeah, of course.
But with the robots, I see what you're saying. We're afraid of the ones that could go.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But we're giving these systems, if you will. They're mostly systems, not actual, you know, like robots sitting there with a face and everything.
I know.
But they have a lot of power. I mean, look what happened with, you know, that plane crash with the Boeing 737. That was a stupid system that didn't know that it was actually about to crash the airplane. And a human would know that instantly.
Exactly. So where should we be? Like, was there anything, did you ever have any, like, I gotta warn people. Are there things you should do, or what perspective? What did you? What kind of?
Well, let me pull back for a second. About we were talking about, you know, having sex with basically a doll.
Yeah, let's do that again.
But what Harmony AI? It's Realbotics is the name of the company, and what they're advertising Harmony as? It's not a sex bot. They're calling it a companionship bot, and in their advertising, they talk about. Be the first to never be lonely again.
Exactly. Okay, I highlighted that here in your book. Right. Never be lonely again.
Yeah.
That is just, and that's what they're saying on the website right now, that these be the first to ever be lonely again.
Yeah.
How is that not going to make you lonely?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it looks, you know, you have to figure out what their market is there, but still is mostly guys, but, you know, it's guys who are lonely and, you know, they have trouble with women. I don't know. They have trouble dating women, meeting women.
And it's kind of like having a, you have a body there, like a robot body.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
So what?
But they remember things. I mean, the AI, what they will tell you is it's machine learning. And these are all buzz terms that mean different things.
Yeah.
And they don't really mean exactly what they sound like always. But machine learning, you know, they do apparently learn about you. You tell them things like your favorite foods and, you know, your favorite color. And, you know, you like sunsets instead of sunrises. And they remember that. And and they talk back, and they have, they're programmed with certain personalities too, which you can actually turn up and down the intensity of, you know,
like kink or what you're able to do sexually. You could be like, tonight I want you to be kinky, I want you to be dominant, and tomorrow night I want you to be submissive.
Yeah,
and if you can kind of, you know, kind of suspend any belief, just be like, this is what it felt like, and I can kind of get my kink met right now, then that might, you know, kind of, I guess that could
could, I understand how that could work for some people sexually, but I don't think it's, yeah.
But it gets even weirder because we start getting into the territory that you and I talk some about the role of technology in general in people, how people are interacting with the world, and especially, you know, with potential lovers or, you know, in relationships, and how, you know, with, forget the robots, the phone, you know, which we talked a little bit about that. The you know, some of these surveys and statistics are not going in a very good direction as people are spending so much time on their
phones. We're like saying, you know, we are sleeping with our phones, we're waking up with our phones, we're staring at the Instagram before we go to bed. We are, it's actually, and every day, that's what we talked about in the book, there's studies coming out every single day that say no one's having sex anymore. We're all addicted to our phones. And yeah, I do see, to me, this is a problem. Like, I feel like I do need to, we talk about this too, no technology in the bedroom. Like, can you, it's really hard though, because it feels like our lifeline. Like 100 times a day, I'm like, Siri, like, where'd my phone go? Like, if it's not near me, because I lose it too. We're at all times, you know, we're obsessed with it, but I don't think that that's healthy. It's almost like a part of you is missing. So to me, that is destructive. And in relation, I mean, definitely in relationships, we choose our phones over our partners. And maybe in a way we don't even have to feel that we're lonely because the phone does feel like a companion. So I guess I could see that transferring into the
That's what people think.
Well.
It's, I mean, these things are, we're finding out more and more. I mean, how much did you love your phone when it first came, the smartphone when it first came out?
We all loved it.
Whoa, man, I can like summon a car. I can, you know, have a GPS. And we're only now finding out some of the darker sides.
But I think it's like everything. Like if you use it in a smart way, like if you use it in the healthiest possible way, but we're not, we're abusing it. And it's, as a result, it's just like numbing. I think it is numbing us out for sure. And also with dating online, that's the other thing. People are saying, oh, you can find anything online now, which you can. And I'm down with people dating, you know, dating apps and all that. But a lot of people are just into the numbing of the swiping, right? They're just like, I don't actually really want to meet with someone, but I'm just going to swipe. So you think you're dating, but then actually going out and meeting. And as a result of that, we're going out less. We're actually not even making efforts to meet people anymore. And then we're losing all of those skills. Like, right? Like, so when we started dating, you had to go out and get rejected. Like, good old-fashioned.
Exactly. I had to go up and say hi, and she would say, go away.
Right. Yeah. And then you feel bad, and then you, right? And you come back, right? But that's, no one's learning that anymore because we're not taking risks.
Yeah.
And so we're not taking risks, and we're staying home with our phones or maybe potentially our robots. But I love, I mean, all this in here about the other people you talk to in here too is that, like tech is making us more isolated, and then also, taking the tech out of the bedroom. And with the robots, like, I want to know, like, would people have sex would you find, was there any part of you that thought an appealing part of it? Like, where would you see the pros in this sex world and technology? Or with these, where it could be going in the future?
That's a chapter. And by the way, in the fictional parts, you know, what we've been talking about here is mostly the present day real stuff. There's even more, but we probably talk about that enough.
I love it. I can talk about it.
Yeah. But the in the fictional parts, and that's one of the funny things about fiction, you never quite know where it's going to go. Like, I didn't set out, okay, I'm going to write this hugely dystopic, horrible thing, although I did that with some of the other chapters. This one turned out, partly because talking to you and some of the other people I talked to, who are basically optimistic about the future of this, you know, we can work this out. I'm not sure you'd be doing what you're doing if you didn't think that.
Yeah, no, I think we can work it out, but I don't think that we're ever going to, and that's what I love how you ended the chapter. It's like, I don't think that we all want to be in perfect relationships, because essentially by getting a sex robot and thinking getting all of your needs met and having this perfect human, that we would get bored. Like, in fact, the messiness of love that we talk about, and that we all kind of, that is part of love, is that it's messy and that it's ups and downs and ebbs and flows, and we would miss that, right? I think we would.
Yeah,
the perfect,
I mean,
partner, everything that's perfect, you need the highs and the lows.
Well, in the story, you actually in the future, and a couple of other relationship therapists invent something called Intimacy Bot, and it's what we described earlier. It's this sort of slab like a phone, and it's programmed with all of your wisdom and these other people's wisdom, and it helps you out. But there comes a time in the future when there's a rival to your Intimacy Bot, and it's called the Perfect Lover Bot.
Yeah.
So that's another company, a rival company, and Perfect Lover Bot tries to actually be that lover that's not, it's not going to push you too hard, it's not going to pull back too hard, it's going to try to get rid of the agonies and the ecstasies of relationships and love.
Right.
Right? Because we all love the ecstasies, but the agony, oh my God, and we can barely get through that. So let's remove that. So that's what this robot in the future, Clay, and intimacy bots go, yeah, it goes like, way down in sales.
I love it. The perfect partner. Yeah, that would do well for a while.
Yeah, well, it does in the future.
Uh-huh. In the future, scenario. In your scenario, it does. I think that was brilliant. But then you realize it.
People kind of all, in the story anyway, they all kind of wake up one day and they go, wait a minute. I actually miss the agony and the ecstasy of love. I mean, that's how...
Poetry. It's
yeah, beauty. That's how you grow. That's how you... Exactly. I mean, we wouldn't have Shakespeare
exactly.
Half the poems in the world without that. And it turns out in the future that people have a choice, but they choose to go, at least most people, with the messy parts. And I got way off in the future because the rest of the book and at the end of the book were billions of years in the future. And even billions of years in the future, we still like the messy parts.
We do like the messy parts because there's no such thing. But it's funny because we want the robots. And like what I got is like, we definitely want them for something. It's like taking out the trash, like doing the things that we do not want to do, right? Cleaning our homes, driving our cars, maybe flying airplanes if we...
Yeah, right.
It doesn't go that well. What else? So we want to do everything, pretty much, like things that we're just annoyed. But then there's been all these studies about when we outsource too many things to people, we actually start to feel, it starts to hamper us after, inhibit us after a while. And we start to, it has started to have negative side effects that we actually should be in charge of all of our own, you know, things that we can kind of delegate away too much.
Well, that's, you just hit on an interesting kind of point, or at least raised in the book. Which is, for the first time in history, we actually are going to be able to have much of that taken care of. I mean, we didn't have the op. Yeah, you didn't have a non-human to like change a diaper for a baby, you know, or you know, maybe to take out the trash. You know, all of these things that we actually really do find annoying are yard work. But it turns out that I think anyway. Well, I don't have a yard anymore, but I used to.
Right.
And I would on the weekends. I would go. I groan. I go, oh God, I got to go out and like, you know, do the gardening. And then I would get out there and I would love it.
Right. Exactly. And nature, getting your hands in the earth is just, it's so healing. I don't think that we do that enough at all. You're right. We would never leave our homes. In fact, that's what, this is my concern right now. We're already not leaving our homes. We already can get everything sent in and ordered in and play our video games and do whatever, that we're not out anymore gardening and doing the things.
And well, and that's right. I think we're getting a little taste of it even now. I mean, so much now is done. And there's not, I mean, even my parents who live in rural Maine, they discovered that they can order online groceries.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that may be one of the last places in America where, you know, they probably had it before. They just hadn't really realized
excited.
How to do
they
it.
They just figured it out.
Yeah. And for them, that's great because they're older and it's hard for them to get out. But, yeah, I don't know where this is all going. You know, you and I are both old enough to remember.
Yeah.
Not that old, but, you know, when you were walking down the street, you couldn't make a call or listen to a podcast.
Find a payphone, yeah.
Yeah, you kind of walk down the street or, you know, driving, you might turn on the radio and listen to some music.
Right. You'd like three stations.
Yeah, you had time to think about things.
Exactly. I don't think that we think that we're always distracted. And this is what I also noticed. We talk more about intimacy and dating, which I have a problem with, is that, do you remember this too? You go into stores or you'd be waiting for your car or you're doing something and you wouldn't be on, you'd have to talk to the person next to you. You would have to make small talk or you'd want to, because what else am I going to do? You're not carrying a newspaper or book with you, maybe, but like mostly you're just, life would not have so many distractions. But now we are gripping our phones all the time, that the second we have downtime, we're like, what's going on? Like on the commercial break, I'll probably check my phone. But before, wherever we were at life, you would have to actually interact. And so this is the whole thing about like loneliness and disconnect. So, yeah, that's...
Well, you're hearing from a lot of people in relationships that he or she doesn't listen to me. Well, we're kind of forgetting how to listen in general, I think. It's, you know, you want to fill that time with something. Oh, my God, I got 10 seconds. I'm going to check something on my phone.
Exactly, exactly. But we would do more thinking and more less distracted times, for sure. But then I think that I've always had a problem with attention. I was distracted by something else, if I'm honest. But I think I definitely had more connections, human interactions. And that's what I think that we all crave at the end of the day. We're always going to remember, like, how much we loved and how much we connected with people. And I don't think that.
No, I think that's right. And in general, not even with just sex intimacy bot, but in the book, where we're starting to get technologies that can deal with aspects of our lives, you know, that mostly have been around emotions and dealing with other people. I mean, more and more robots and AI are going to be taking over roles like that. And what does that mean? I mean, you know, first of all, who programs them? What, another chapter, the first chapter in the book is called Teddybot. And, you know, that was Kevin Kelly, the futurist, who's an amazing writer, and he came up with Teddybot. But we dreamed up this future robot that basically raised our kids, and it's advanced AI. They're probably sentient. They teach, they protect, all of that. And then we got into who programs Teddybot? I mean, right. Is who does? Strict or lenient?
Well,
or
that's the
what,
thing.
Politically, how, you know, who programs?
You know, right. What if you don't like the way they're raising your children? Like, to me, that sounds horrible. Why would I wouldn't want that. But
that's kind of, almost, you know, as even Alexa, I mean, mostly Alexa and Siri are still pretty neutral, right? You know, they have a female voice, which is kind of controversial. But beyond that, they don't really have much of a personality. But they will.
They will have a personality,
yeah,
for sure.
And
sometimes I wish they did.
Yeah. Well,
right?
See?
Okay. Sometimes I wish Siri could just be a little kinder. A little more, like, say a little thing more to me. Like, just, hey, my phone's here. I know you lost it 6 times today, but I'm right here, Em.
Yeah. Or maybe tease you about it. Like, really?
Teasing.
Did you just
but
lose
that's
it again?
That is what's going to happen. But yeah, who is programming all the robots? This is going to be fascinating. Well, I love the work that you've done here, David. I think it's going to be fascinating for everyone to read your book when it comes out. Talking to Robots, Tales from Our Human-Robot Futures. You did such a great job with it.
Thank you.
And we're going to link to all of this. Where can people find you?
Maybe the easiest, it's Dutton Books, which is part of Penguin. So
okay.
You can go on the Penguin site and put my name in, or my website, David Ewing Duncan.
David Ewing Duncan.
It's got a lot of stuff on it.
Okay, we're going to have that in our show notes, and we're going to have that on the website. And thank you so much, David, for being here. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get into your emails.
Okay, so then this email came in to us from Sarah, who's 30 in Colorado. She wrote, "Hi, Emily. My husband and I have been together for 12 years and share 3 children. Before we were together, I explored my sexuality and did things that he never experienced. Lately, he's brought up the idea of a threesome, and I do not want to participate. I've done it and didn't enjoy myself. He said I should compromise and allow him to have anal sex with me. Again, I've done it. I didn't enjoy it. Am I being selfish and refusing these requests? He says I need to be more giving of myself and that I should want to help him explore more of his sexuality. I don't know what to do."
All right. Hey, Sarah. Thank you for your email. Okay, Sarah, you guys have been together for 12 years. You have 3 children. And I think, yeah, I think it's important for you both together to work on your sex life. So my concern here is, yeah, essentially your husband's saying, listen, we've been together for 12 years. I want to prioritize our sex life and try some things different. Because as you know, if you've been paying attention, but you've been following along with this sex family journey, it's going to get stale after a while. Like everything, you got to mix it up. So that's what he's saying to you. And the only thing he can probably pull out, because that's like the top fantasies for men, if they haven't had anal yet, they want anal. If they haven't had a threesome, they want a threesome. Because that's just what he knows. So Sarah, I'm telling you is that it's up to you then. You don't have to give in to anal and you don't have to have a threesome. But what you do is you have to, it's still your job. It's your responsibility as a partner in your relationship to work, to co-create a sex life that for both of you works. So if you don't want anal, you don't want a threesome, what do you want? What would be hot for you to explore? Because it sounds like it's about him and he wants you to compromise. And, you know, and I'm not hearing anything here about what you want. And I get it, too, because you've probably been very busy with 3 children.
Mm.
And you're 30 years old. And you're probably exhausted and your hormones are depleted and you're wiped out. And I get it. And sex is the last thing on your mind. So there's a certain place where he's, you know, takes 2 to tango. I think that you guys have to have a conversation. When you guys have time, hopefully you have a date night or you have a babysitter come over or you go on, I don't know if you've gone on vacation yet without the kids, but I think that's really important. Something as simple as a weekend away could really bring you guys closer together. And then you can have these talks or when the kids are sleeping and just say, I hear what you're saying about the anal and threesomes. I've tried them before. Let's talk about some other things we could do that would be, you know, that would turn me on. That would be great. Maybe you need some more foreplay, some mm-hmm. foot rubs, some intimacy in a way. Maybe you need to get your hormones checked. Maybe you need more babysitters so you have more time to yourself. I understand that you know, not feeling sexy anymore in your body. And the other thing I want to say, this doesn't really match for you, Sarah, necessarily, but a lot of us have tried things once and we didn't like them. Anal is a popular one that a lot of people are like, nope, tried it once, it's not for me. And it's also one of those things, the first time we do it, it's usually with a partner, because most people really don't know how to do it correctly, I would say, if you're younger, if you did it when you were before you were with him. So 12, you did it when you were 18. So I'm going to assume that you did it, Sarah, and if someone, you used no lube, they did it right away, it hurt. And so anal can be really pleasurable for a lot of people when it's done right, but incorrectly, it's friggin' painful. So that's what I got to say about you. There might be a way to slow it down to listen to how we explain it on the show. We've got a lot of good blogs on our site. Mm-hmm. We've got a little information on how to do anal right, not how to do it wrong. Most people do it wrong.
Yeah, I mean, at least she's like said, she's like, I've gone through it. I don't need it. I feel, how does a couple with children, yeah, but how does a couple with children kind of like go through the idea of bringing another person?
You get a babysitter, you go to Vegas for the weekend, you...
So definitely not at home.
No. You don't want your kid to be like, mommy, oops, who's the extra daddy in the room or mommy in the room? No.
Yeah.
You don't want that. You're like, who's in bed with you, mommy?
That'd be an interesting story.
That would be a great story. Exactly. In therapy in 20 years, you know, you think they're going to be talking about that when kids don't forget. So, yeah. But I think he's just the kind of desperate for, again, you guys, it might not even be that he needs all these things. He just needs some kind of connection, intimacy. And maybe he just needs the enthusiasm, Sarah, from you, even if you don't. I just get it, though. I get both sides of it. She's probably exhausted and doesn't even feel enthusiastic for sex anymore. So that's why it's important. You've been listening to the show to, like, do what you can to get into your body, to masturbate, get to know yourself again sexually, and ask for what you want. It's important. Partners aren't mind readers. They're not mind readers. We wish they were. Yep, they're not.
Okay, so we got another question coming in from Instagram. It says, I don't know how to initiate sex on dates. How could you please help?
Who's it from? Man or woman?
It's from a man.
Man.
Yes.
Okay, so initiating sex on dates is really about, I mean, it's about like re-initiating sex or kissing. I don't know. It's about like finding out if your partner is, if your person's like into it. So I think you got to start slow. You got to read their body language. You know, you could start out like with a kiss. You could start out saying like, oh, I just keep thinking about kissing you. I'd love to kiss you right now. I mean, honestly, just saying I want to kiss you or I keep thinking about it is a great way to let someone know you're interested. I think also since we don't have a ton of practice now out like connecting and communicating with people because most people are on their phones all the time and I think we're losing that, that it's really awkward. Like this period of initiating is awkward. So I think even asking permission and letting them know you're interested, because then we separate from each other. We have hot dates. And then people are like, oh, couldn't tell if he was into me. Couldn't tell if I was into her. And so letting it be known is a really like, I think in a direct way, but not acting on it and asking a question could be a good way to go.
I think also just like, you like each step of the way, because I like when a guy asks me, oh, can I kiss you? Because then it takes away that awkward head shove thing, or like where they lean in and you're like, I don't know yet,
right?
And then you're like, go for it, and then it could be awkward. But if someone, why do you think it is that people think it's not hot to ask?
Probably because they don't ask correctly or something, or maybe they're like, oh no, just do it. Because women sense mixed signals sometimes, like, I just want you to do it, I just want to know. And then if people do it and they're not ready, like, oh, why are you coming in? So I don't think someone hasn't done it that right, like, I'd really want to kiss you, right? I think it would be, I don't know why I think it's like ruins the moment, but that's only if you're someone who's inside of your head. You when a moment is ruined, you are allowing the moment to be ruined. Like, you are interpreting whatever happened to, you're creating a story about whatever happened and making it a bad moment. But really, if you just stay in the moment, you can be like, oh, he's interested in me, that's what I wanted. Like, don't judge the way he showed it, because you have to give people credit, whoever's doing the initiating, that it's not easy. And that's why one of the top questions I hear from men are like, why won't my partner initiate? My partner's initiate all the time. It's because a lot of us aren't oriented that way. Like, we never had to. So cut him some slack if it's a little awkward the first time, or it's a weird kind of fumble towards kissing you or making the move. Like, it's not easy. Mm-hmm. And you're facing rejection. It's scary.
I have a question. What's a good way, say that I'm into this person, what is a good way to let the person know that you're into them, but you're not ready for it yet?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's like, God, yeah, I've thought about, I think it's like, you know what? I'm really feeling this with you. I'm having a good attraction to you, but I want to go slow. I think it's just like, yeah,
I would love to see you again. And I think we should end this date, but let him know you're interested, but it just, you want to go slow. Yeah. I think that we forget sometimes that we just kind of push people away because we like freak out in the moment and then we send the signal that we're not interested. But if we just say, I'm into you, but not right now. And that's just a matter of being in your body and recognizing like, and this is what I want everyone to practice, is like not just giving in because someone asked you to have sex or because guilted into it or shame or anything, but more like it's okay to think you might want it, but not be ready yet.
Mm.
I think that's really healthy. And that's the practice of being. Again, like this weekend, I talked about this embodiment work. What is your body feeling? What is it telling you in the moment? It knows. Like, we all know. We have to pay attention and not act from like a fearful place or like I should have sex with this person because I'm on a date with them and they brought me to a nice dinner or I'm already back. Here's another big one. If you're already back at someone's house and you guys are like fooling around and things are getting hot and then in your mind you're like, I'm not sure I want to go ahead with this. Totally okay to stop. In fact, I encourage it. If you're not feeling, you'd be like, wait, you know what? Let's stop for a minute. I just need to take a few deep breaths. It's kind of going fast. Let's just kind of, you know, breathe together, talk together. I mean, it's a lot better. And then you reset rather than being like, no, pushing their hands away, then leaving, or like, then they feel like they fucked up. I mean, just communicate whatever you're feeling in the moment.
All right. This one's an interesting one. This is okay. An email we got from Anne, 20 in Quebec. Hi, Emily. My boyfriend has a tickling fetish. I don't share this turn on, but it is a lot of fun. So I enjoy having tickling involved in our sex life. However, my boyfriend has only been able to finish when tickling is involved. I don't have a problem with this at all, but I think it would be fun to get him off different ways as well. Any tips for someone with a fetish to get off without it? Thanks.
All right, Anne, this is a good question because let me tell you guys, there is a difference between like a fetish and like having a propensity or kink towards something. When you have a fetish, like he's a tickle fetish or you have a foot fetish or a leather fetish, that object is actually required for complete arousal. Like, if he's not tickling you, he can't get aroused. And I don't think he can finish either. Now maybe he's aroused and there is another way to finish him with tickling, with him tickling you, but you'd have to practice with him. That'd be something that you need to talk to him about. And honestly, if you're both 20, there's ways to learn. Just because it's a fetish and he requires it, maybe you could tickle him and then he could have sex with you simultaneously while you're tickling him. I don't really know his scenario, but I think that letting him know that you'd like to explore, I don't think it's as set as we think. Like, you guys could try try different ways. But I just want people to understand the difference. Like, so you're like, oh my God, I have a total fetish for something, blowjobs, or fetish for dancers. But really, that might just be a attraction rather than like a requirement that you need for sex to happen.
Is there a way, like with some kind of sex therapy, you can unlearn a fetish, or is it pretty ingrained?
It's pretty ingrained, you know. We studied this. There's been a lot of studies on this, and it's like, it's a very, I mean, there is behavioral conditioning. There are ways to rewire your brain to stop doing everything. So yes, I think that if you learn to replace that desire towards, say, tickling, and you replace it with something else, and you might have to work with some kind of behavioral therapist or some kind of practice, that you absolutely could. But it's not it's not going to go away unless you do some really rigorous behavioral training.
Hmm.
Yeah. So if you got one, you might as well live it up.
Okay. Let's do another one here from Instagram. It says, my girlfriend doesn't like receiving oral. What kind of things can I do to persuade her? And this is coming from a man.
Okay. Well, you're not going to persuade her, but what you can do is there's a lot of women who don't like receiving oral sex. And my belief is that there's two kinds. One is the woman who actually doesn't feel good. There's a lot of women who have very, very sensitive clitorises, and it just really doesn't feel good. And for those women whose clitoris are sensitive, they're like, no, it doesn't feel good. And sometimes those women can have like multiple orgasms. However, there's some women who think like you don't really want to be going down on them, or like maybe something's wrong, or they smell funny, or they don't have the confidence. So what you have to do there is just say, you know what? I think that it would, you could ask too and say, what is it about me, you know, going down on you that you're not into? And you could say, I'm just asking because I want to understand more about you. We're together and I want to understand what turned you on and what you're into sexually. And she might just say, I don't know, I don't like it. Or she could say, well, I had a bad experience once. Or she might say, well, I don't really feel like you want to. Or she'll say, I think I feel gross down there. And then that's when you have a chance to say, no, babe,
oh my God, I think it'd be so hot. I just want to go down on you all night. I want you to lay back. I want you to, like, you know, my favorite thing for someone to say is if you want to go down on a woman and she's not into it, after you guys have this chat, just say, babe, I'm not going anywhere. I got all night. And then you want to be like, I'm so into you. You smell good. You taste good. And I think that the more that women can just kind of relax into oral, that they'll come around. But again, it's a process. You're not going to be like, get her into it without understanding more about why she doesn't want to before you can move forward.
Mm-hmm. So this one comes from Sarah. She wants to know, how do guys feel about shaving / not shaving for sex? I had a recent experience where I wasn't shaved and the guy didn't say anything, but I still felt really insecure throughout the entire encounter.
Oh, okay. So Sarah, how do you feel about shaving? I think that what we have to remember is you get to decide. You get to decide how you feel. Now, was it like, are you usually shaved, but you weren't shaved? I really think that most guys you're with aren't going to care, and they're happy to be having sex with someone. And I think if a guy shames you about it and makes you feel bad about it, then I don't think he's the person for you. And I think you have to do whatever makes you feel comfortable. And I don't know how old she is, but it's a good lesson to learn, because I think when you maybe were a little younger, you might not really, you might think, oh, you know, what do guys like? What do people? And I think that is the common, like, we were guys want to know what do girls like. But what I'm telling you is what really matters is what you like. Because then, you know, we always say, what I always say, what is true is that confidence is the sexiest thing in the bedroom. So if you are rocking shaved, unshaved, landing strip, whatever people do, carving initials into your, I don't know.
Have you ever gotten a shape?
No, I haven't. I'm surprised I haven't. That seems like something I would do.
What kind of shape?
Like
the lips from your logo.
Yeah. Oh.
Ooh, kiss here.
Kissy. No, I think I tried to. No, I usually just like take it off. But I think I was going to do a guy's initials once, but it was a G and it was just really hard to do. I just failed. I like tried to.
So you're going
to
add a G spot above your G spot.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. I should get a tattoo that just is like, here's a G spot. Here's a clitoris.
You just like
arrows.
Tattoo yeah. instructions.
Exactly.
Onto your vulva.
No, I'm not just stressful creepy. To have sex with at all. I swear to God, people are always like, are guys intimidated to date you? I'm like, no. It's all written out for them, right all over my body. It's tattoos. It just says, here's my nipple. Slow down. It's like a game, like a board game. You get going down, Maze. Going down to me, and it'd be like 5 minutes, at least 5 minutes on the nipples. Slow it down. And then he's going further down. I'm like, nope, not yet. But like my body, yes.
What if there was like an operation game, but for turning on your partner or a woman or a man or whoever it is?
Yes.
And it kind of just like you can tailor it, like you can program it, and then you give it to your partner. You program it like to do,
but is it really operation buzz. Where you're picking it?
Well, yeah, because you just have to it'll be like the same kind of thing, and you have to touch the parts. But if you go too fast,
yeah,
be like it'll so buzz good. And it'll
right, yeah, drop the bone, or you drop the heart rate.
Or if you skip over the breast completely, it's just like the game blows up.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think it's great. I think whatever helps us, we need some instructions, and it could be a fun game. It doesn't have to be operation, but with your partner, like if you're like, I don't know how to explain what I want, if your partner's on board, you could have like one night being all about your pleasure, and you do this. You're like, let's start making out, and then don't. And if you both agree that you get to lead one night and the next night, then you don't have to worry, anything goes. Like, if you're a pleaser, because the thing is, like, Sarah's a pleaser probably too. Sarah, like, what's right? What's wrong? You know, I think a lot of women are, we want to do it. But this way, if you're with a partner, like, I can't worry if they aren't into the fact that I want more making out or I want more oral sex or I want my toy. Like, I can't worry about it because it's, I'm directing the sex that night with my partner as we're moving through. I'm like, no, not so fast. And then they know. And then the next night, it's kind of like the kissing thing I talk about, where people believe that if a bad kisser is reasons for dismissal, and that just means that you're not meant to be together. And I just don't think that's true, because I think you can work on kissing. You're like, I want you to show me how you want to be kissed, and then I'll show you how I want to be kissed. So, and I think that works for a lot of people. So that could also work for foreplay. Like, I'm showing you what I like one night. Or it could be a game. Yeah, or you could do the game of operation as well. Just gamify your sex life. We gamify everything else. Why not?
Why not?
I'm picturing Jamie, someone like doing it to her, and she's like, like screams at their face that they're doing it wrong. Like, no. Like someone doing it to you personally.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Sometimes I do feel like in the moment I try to make it sound sexy directions, but I think sometimes I'm also like, I'm just like, no, touch me here.
Yeah.
Like, I don't.
Yeah,
like,
Jamie's abrupt.
Uh-huh. You're right.
I need to be just more like flowy.
Flowy, touch me here. It's practice.
It is.
Practice with your slut bot robot friend. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed this show and hope you enjoyed the interview with David Ewing Duncan. And just thanks, everyone, for supporting the show and for sharing the show with your friends, with your neighbors, with whoever you think would get a benefit from the show and help them with their relationships and sex life. Like, it's helped you. We so appreciate it, and we love when you subscribe. And just thanks, everyone, for supporting the show. Thank you also to my amazing team, Ken, Kristen, Michelle, producer Jamie, and Michael. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.